$1 million. So you've got $17 million worth of coverage there. If it went beyond the $17 million, then the question came, if this bill went into effect 90 days following, do you still have for this first year the ability to be able to go back and reassess those costs to the landowners? Or are we now under the new system that we all have been thinking was a second year implementation? And that's what the effective date would be then, is the effective date for the repeal of 285, December 31, 1990, which should allow adequate time for the cost of the fire season for this year to go back to the Emergency Fire Cost Committee in February. You'll recall a discussion of that language. They meet in February to determine what those costs were, and then to send an indication to the districts what their share of that, additional share of that cost would be.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Bradbury,
if you do it December 31st, 1990, you're in December after the second fire season from today.
That's correct.
But that would allow you to, would this change here allow you to put the $10 million system in place, maybe after the fact, but in place for next, the 1990 fire season?
That is my understanding. Mr. Lane has a comment.
I just want to make sure. Well, I think it's 90.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Lane, if I could. The reason for the December 31st, 1990 date is that by June 30th, in fact, it's actually the first weekend, the first Wednesday of June of 1990, the Board of Forestry will have to review all the costs for this coming fire season and certify to the county assessors by July 1, 1990, what the costs were in this coming fire season, whether over expenditures or whatever. By July 1st, certify to the county assessors. Then the assessor collects that on November 15th or whenever he collects that. And the rationale for December 31 was to give the assessor time to do his collection process in case there were any excess overruns in this current fire season. The $10 million and all the new program would start July 1, 1990, when they would start off.
Where does it say that?
In the last.
Well,
second year of the biennium.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe what's important is, for the record, we accept that and agree with that amendment. And I think everybody understands that exactly what is in this bill when it goes into effect and what the liabilities are. Is there any more? Any other questions?
That was it. The motion, I would move we adopt the 2237A5 amendments dated 6889.
Senator Bradbury moves that we adopt
with the submission.
With the addition of an effective date for section 6 of December 31st, 1990.
Senator Bradbury moves amendments 2237-85 dated 6889 with the addition of section 6, effective date being December 31st, 1990. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bradbury.
May I make one more point? Mr. Chairman, in discussion with Mr. Wilson down in Legislative Council, he indicated that it may be necessary to make a technical change or technical amendment to ORS 477-750, subsection 3, which references 477.230. And we repealed a portion of that related to the district limitation on the purchase of insurance. And so it may be necessary to make a technical change there. He says he can make that as long as the subcommittee is aware.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury moves in concept a technical change in ORS 477-750 sub 3. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
I would move House Bill 2237 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bradbury moves House Bill 2237 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Aye.
So ordered. And we have before us a letter everybody has a copy of it on Joint Ways and Means Stationery dated June 13th, 1989.
Mr. Chair, motion in order. I would move that we send the letter that dated June 13th, 1989 to Mr. Brown as we have it before.
And Bradbury moves the letter that dated June 13th, 1989 to Mr. Brown. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Yes, according to House rules, the chair of the substitute committee has authority to nullify any amendments that we make, and we've cleared that with the chair, and we will send him a letter or deliver him a letter so he can sign it and we can keep it in the record so that everything is okay. Anything else? We're adjourned.
So June 14th, House Bill 2100 and Senate Bill 105.
Development of Ways and Means Committee have come to order. We're in work session on House Bill 2100. Any comments? Corey, where were we?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The subcommittee had a public hearing and took testimony on House Bill 2100 on May 22nd. And at that time, you were informed that there's quite a history behind the log brands. And the agency currently provides funding through commingling of general funds and other funds from other sources. The bill would provide the agency with the revenues adequate enough to be able to fund the program from log brand fees, where now they take those monies from some other source. So this would totally dedicate the program with a five-year period to other funds derived from the log brands.
Senator Bradbury.
How do we deal with this in the budget, which is already gone?
About 46% of the cost is general fund, and the other 54% is other fund limitation.
So do we assume that this bill is going to pass when we adopted the budget?
No, Mr. Chairman, this bill will have a futuristic impact
on
the agency's
now.
Budget. Will not impact the current budget.
Current biennial budget?
Current biennial budget.
Mr. Chair, are you aware of any proposed amendments to the bill?
No, I guess so. Just to sum up where we were, Representative Hanneman wanted us to wait a few days until he had time to check with the people. And,
okay.
As I understand it, he's now okay and not here.
I would move House Bill 2100 to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
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 Mr. Chair, May I ask Steve to note the approximate percent division of funds currently today? I note on the discussion point following ag, forestry, and natural resources that some recommended a no recommendation on the measure in mild protest regarding the method employed to replace general fund revenue in existing programs with fee increases. So I think we were able to show that it hadn't been raised in 75 or 4 or 75. Plus, it'll help remind us.
We'll now open the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 155. Oh, I guess we can't do that. We're waiting for our analyst.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to cardboard for him.
Okay. Summarize the bill.
I'm unprepared to do that, Mr. Chairman.
Barring that, we'll have Bill Young from the Water Resources Department tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Young from the Water Resources Department. As the is indicated on the face of the bill, this is a bill proposed by our department. We were proposing this, and it was reviewed in front of the Senate Water Committee, looking at the question of how we could make this program, the Water Development Loan Program, that you folks heard a good deal about as we presented you our budget, how we could put ourselves in a position to deal most actively and we hope productively with properties that we may find ourselves having to take back as part of the non-performing loans that we would have. The most of the provisions that are in this bill, I think, are ones that we offered to the Water Committee in its initial draft, or at least very close copies of that original information that we presented, and we certainly favor those sections of the bill strongly. This bill was being considered by the Senate Water Committee at the same time that our department, along with the Treasurer's Office, was working and looking at developing the last cash flow analysis that you folks saw as you finished up on our budget. As part of that discussion, the Treasurer's Office expressed concern about the ability that we would have to go back and collect any monies that had already been credited to people with interest, already credited in years past in this program. Treasurer's Office, I think, was particularly concerned about our proposing to try and do that based on the experience they had had with the Veterans Loan Program and similar aspects of our program to that one in the view of the Treasurer's Office. As a result of those discussions, the fiscal analysis that you saw and the cash flow analysis that you saw did not contemplate in any of those scenarios that we showed you the recovery of any of those dollars. And this bill, as it comes before you, was further amended by the Senate Water Committee to add Section 2 to make it clear that we were not to attempt to recover any of those already credited interest amounts that had been credited to borrowers prior to January 1 of 1986. If the Treasurer's Office is represented here, they may be able to speak more elaborately than I can for the view that they held on that bill. It's a view that we certainly do not disagree with. And we're strongly in favor of the bill as it comes before you because we think it does clarify what expectations there are for our agency, as well as giving us some fairly clear authority to deal with properties that we recover in a way that we think will maximize the state's position on those properties when we get them back.
Any questions?
Is there a fiscal impact on this bill?
I'm sure there is. Let me get the materials.
I notice there's a blank on page 4, shall not exceed X million, blank million. But anyway, what was the reception like in the substantive committee, Bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hemme, my recollection is after these issues had been resolved amongst the borrowers, out of those discussions, looking at the cash flow with the treasurer's office, my recollection is that the bill came out of the Senate committee unanimously.
Great.
If I'm wrong on that, stand to be corrected, but I think that's right.
Was there a recommendation for the blank on page 4?
I do not recall that there was any discussion of that, Senator Hemme.
Your recommendation?
I'm trying to understand. Roland, can you help me?
Our initial discussions was to put a $2 million figure in
there. Roland Smith, who the manager of this program has just joined me, and he indicates that our original discussion had been a $2 million figure in there, but that the figure had been left blank for further discussions here before the Ways and Means Subcommittee.
Bill, if you recall, when we went through your budget, we put in $330,000 in general funds into this program, and we're talking about in allocating another $1.1 million to the E-Board for defaults. Is that... included in the $2 million that you were originally expecting to place in this bill, or would that be $2 million in addition?
The place, I think, Mr. Chairman, where that has any effect is in Section 2, where that is the section that prohibits us from going back and attempting to recover any of these already credited interests. And all of those figures that you talked about before your subcommittee, pursuant to the letter of recommendation that came over from the treasurer's office, did not assume that we would collect any of those interests. So I think this limitation on our ability to go after that interest is consistent with the discussion you had here with infusing that program with the $330,000 worth of general fund, and then the discussion about the potential of returning to the emergency board depending on whether or not our experience with defaults from this point forward went beyond what was built into that cash flow analysis that you had.
As I read the bill, pretty well gives the commission some broad powers to make these decisions. Would those decisions be made through rulemaking, or would they be just a commission vote at a meeting on what to do on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, our commission has already adopted rules having to do with how we're to pursue this program, and just as with any other statute, assuming that this passes, we'll be looking at that and visiting with our commission, and they'll provide us direction as to those places where they think more rulemaking is needed. That's not a bit unusual when there are additions to a statute. And if it appears to our commission to be necessary, go beyond the authority they've already identified, I'm sure we will be undertaking rulemaking there. We've not done that analysis as yet on this or any other bills that are being considered in this session.
Well, some of these loans may have been made before you took over leadership of now the commission as director. Do you know if there's been a policy that that proper appraisals would be made of property that, or whatever was used as collateral before that would happen?
There were, Mr. Chairman, policies in place at the time when this program was most active. I can't speak specifically to them because we're looking in a time frame of about 1979 to about 82 or 83. In 1985, our commission adopted a set of rules that talked about the maximum percentage of security that could be loaned and a variety of things like that. They've augmented those rules, I guess, at least once since they adopted them initially. So I think the answer is yes, there are policies in place now if this program were to find itself reactivated in terms of making loans. The program since 1984, I guess, when the last loan was made, has essentially been a process of trying to manage a program that has a fair number of troublesome accounts, as we visited with you about when we were here before your subcommittee with our budget. Our expectation, based on your direction in that budgeting process, is that if there is further activity in this program, it would be limited to extending loans to public entities of one sort or another. And as I recall it, there's the additional admonition that we return to the emergency board for approval on any specific loans that we would be proposing to undertake. So this matter will be, for better or worse, before this subcommittee or a committee similar to it, if there's any further loaning activity to be done.
Well, as I understand it, then under the present law, you have some authority to go after or do whatever you need to do to collect loans and make sure people make their payments on time.
Mm-hmm.
What effect will this bill, how will this change that, and provide for a better collection, or this just takes effect if there's a default or if there's a claim made for that interest?
We've functioned with the advice of the Attorney General on a fair amount of implied authority in terms of our ability to bid on property that was going into foreclosure, in terms of our ability to attempt to do what we need to do in the way of spending money on property to keep it marketable and so on. This bill, in very large part, in the amendments that we proposed, make it clear in statute that those clearly are intended authorities that we have. And we're here in some part because the Attorney General thought it was best to show those authorities very clearly. So we're essentially trying to give us the same kind of flexibility that we would have in managing properties we might end up taking back that other lenders historically have had, and that we think we probably have by implication, although our statute was not very clear on that. At the time that passed, I don't think there was great contemplation about how you dealt with foreclosures and so on.
There's been some concern expressed to me that that even though we're trying to run this now as a very tight business, so to speak, on this loan and getting the money back and everything, that this Senate Bill 155 could give some leeway for people that might have loans that are possibly members of the department or commission members or anybody like that that might be concerned that if the commission was to make a decision that there could be some perception of impropriety about forgiving loans or forgiving interest or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any loan that is currently held in this program that is held by certainly any member of our commission, and I'm not aware of any loans that are held by any members of the department. They would have been a theoretically appropriate applicant, but if there are any such as the 120 or so loans that we have outstanding, I'm not aware of.
How long is the average or the longest loan before it will be paid off?
All of this will be paid out by the year 2014.
All of the existing bonds?
Yeah, all of the existing bond indebtedness that we have will be paid out by the year 2014. Is that true of all the loans we have outstanding?
It is true of all the loans we have outstanding. The contract, some of them will extend past that.
Roland advises me that all of the loans we have outstanding were scheduled to the same retirement date as the bonds. On some of the properties that we've taken back, there are some contracts that we've struck that will extend a bit beyond that period of time. But our bond indebtedness that we have incurred in this program will have, unless other bonds were issued, will have run its course by the year 2014. And that was the life that we showed, as I recall it, in the cash flow analysis that we provided for the subcommittee.
I know Senator Bradbury has a project that he's been talking about for a municipal type loan. Sounds to me like some of the loans that you had outstanding have already been going for 10 years or more, and they, some of those could last for another 20, 30 years. How many, what was the full life of any loan that the longest of any loan?
I'll turn to Roland if he has that information.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Roland Smith. I'm the loan program manager for the Water Development Loan Program. The loans that were made through the loan program had amortization periods or life of the loan anywhere from 10 years to a maximum of 30 years. The exact breakdown of percentage, I don't know how many were for 30 and how many were for 10. Some of them, as I say, were with a maximum of 30 years, so it could go out another 20 years.
I'd just like to talk a little bit about the language of the bill. And there's words such as compromise, release, discharge, waiver, waive, cancel, or settle a claim. Those are all terms that allow you to do something different than what you're doing now. Maybe you could explain that to me, and then we're talking about maybe contracting the management of this loan program out to a second party. What kind of leeway would that give that second party, or even your department, before you release it to just up and say, well, we have a loan out here and the guy's having a hard time, we might as well just forget about it. Is that that's something going to happen, or that's something that could happen down the line?
Go ahead. Okay. Mr. Chairman, in regard to that terminology, we, on all of the loans as they exist now under the current bond indentures, we do not have the flexibility to forgive any debt for them. The reason we're asking for this particular language is in that we are sometimes placed in a position through a bankruptcy action in which they wish to negotiate with us to establish a debt or extend the payments. And at this point in time, we do not have the flexibility under the statute to agree to any negotiations with them. We basically have to just sit and let the court place upon us whatever burden they wish. And by being able to have some flexibility to go into that process, we can improve our position. The other part of the language in there is to allow for partial releases, and that goes on the basis of the way it's set up now is we would require appraisals of that property to make sure that whatever the remaining security was, that it would be adequate to cover whatever the existing debt was on the loan. The language also goes on to say that whatever it is that we do, we have to justify that it's not going to have a detrimental effect upon the cash flow of the program.
The language, Mr. Chairman, that you were referring to indeed does give our commission the ability, presumably after rulemaking, to do the variety of things you've identified. If the commission can judge that that action is consistent with the purposes of the statute, doesn't impair the ability to pay the administrative expenses of the commission or to retire bonds, under the circumstances, the commission makes that judgment, believing that's the most likely way to preserve the claim or make the largest recovery that we can when we're dealing with a non-performing loan. So those are the sorts of conditions that would direct the commission, either in rulemaking or as they look at an individual loan. The second part of your question as to what authority might ultimately be given out to a third-party manager of this program, and that's a look that the Treasurer is anxious to take and that we certainly don't have a quarrel with taking. The judgment of how much of that work would be done by that third-party manager, what authorities they had to make judgments of that sort, would be reflected, I presume, in the contract that would be struck, that would be reflected in the request for proposal that would go out to ask someone to bid on that. I suspect the commission cannot, in essence, contract away their ultimate authority to make those judgments and make the judgment that it's the best for the program and the best for protecting the state's interest in the program.
Well, then, further, I'd just like to be assured that even though we're giving you additional latitude to make deals or whatever, that there's going to be some strict accountability about what happens. Does, since the program, you've decided it was in trouble over the last 3 or 4 years, you haven't been in a position to grant any more loans. Has the commission been presented all these arguments and kept a strict accounting and strict update on what's been going on?
The commission's been involved, as I indicated, Mr. Chairman, in at least two rulemaking processes where there was a fairly good discussion, I think, of the program. A management study that we talked about at some length when we were before you with our budget had a number of comments to make about this program, as well as audits that we've had from the Secretary of State's office and those of